So the question here at hand is this, that earthquakes are natural phenomena or the result of our sins?
Yes.
Generally, it's not a this or that question.
Okay.
It's the middle way out.
Yes.
So it's a natural phenomena as it is, as well as it has some relation to our kind of deeds. You see, so when an unexpected catastrophes happen, like earthquakes and others such as hurricanes and other natural calamities that occur, people from earliest time to present used it to prove God's justice, that okay. God's justice is not as just as they said. But this is not the truth. The relative judgment and limited knowledge that we have, normally all of us in our judgment, stress the relation things that have with us. For instance, we say such and such is near us or far from us. For example, we have rain. You see, rain causes is one of the calamities in some places. It rains, yes. And you see that some places get flooded.
Yes.
Really bad flood. So okay. It is also known as one of the phenomena and calamity. But the problem is because I'm looking at it as my perception, I feel it to be bad, you see. But I don't take into consideration that it's not only me living in this world. It's me, it's plants, it's animals, it's nature occurrences, cause and effects, you see. All of these are accumulated as one. So when a natural phenomenon like earthquake, rain takes place, yes. It takes into consideration everything, not only a human being or so. In issues related to good and evil and calamities and same, for instance, regarding the rain that we see and the earthquake, where we see an earthquake that happens in a country, for example, yes. We see that the town or the city is less affected compared to villages.
Yes.
You see, the villages are completely destroyed. When we destroy, for example, right now, when we want to destroy, this is just another example to
yes.
try to explain earthquake. When we destroy a building
mm-hmm.
in order to build a new one, and we only share it dust. So when you destroy a building, you just see dust. But in future, this building is going to be a medical center that would be used for a lot of people. More people can benefit from it. And to make a new building, obviously, you have to destroy the older one.
Yes.
And that takes place with this kind of occurrences by breaking down the buildings to build a new one. You can't just wait for a building to fall off.
Okay.
You see? So the same thing goes for earthquakes and other things, of which they say for earthquake has two natural phenomena why it takes place. One of them is when there is a shift in water, and the other one when there is a moon
yes.
pull that pulls yes. the earth towards itself.
Okay.
That's when it happens. And the benefits of earthquake, if seen, they produce gas and minerals, different kind of minerals that are buried. You see them floating above for the benefit of mankind. You see?
That's right. So these are about the natural, the cancer reasons.
Yeah, natural occurrences. Okay. At the same time, we want to talk about the second part, that
yes.
is the sins. What we have seen here, the sins are accumulated two ways. One is the sins that we know that these are sins
yes.
that we shouldn't occur, and where Allah has stated many times, we have seen in the Quran and also in Hadith, if you do this and this, this will take place. If you do this and that, that will take place. For example, if we see the occurrence at the time of Prophet Lut, alayhi salam, that when people went against the natural cause and effect, they created something that was not supposed to be created. The lightning that happened towards the city.
Yes.
You see, these are some kind of sins that actually do bring the thing very fast. And we can see that some of the good things that we do can sometime delay the effect. For example, if earthquake is supposed to happen right now, but because the community, the town, the center does good things, they prevent themselves from sinning, they delay it. like the effect delays it or something happens, but in protecting the sanctity of these people. Sometimes, no, it is because of the issues. Earthquake is not a new phenomenon.
Yes.
It is a very old one.
Yes.
And from this old phenomenon, earthquake somewhat is good for what? Two to three things. One, it provides gases and natural things. It is good for the natural flow of the earth. And third, for historical experiences,
yes.
When we know this kind of earthquake happens, we try to do what? We try to build buildings that are anti-earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in a way, they protect us from earthquake. You see, the thing is that sometimes because we do not want to make, we do not want to take lessons from it, we end up building normal building, knowing that this is an earthquake place. In general, but yes. We do not take lesson and build something that is better. Sometime we have seen in construction, and yes. This is not the first time, that normally the standard of such building
yes. In
any city has some standards. But because those standards are not made out, those standards are not used, because of making more money, some of these people go and create buildings that are of low quality, and when this kind of incident happens, it has high effect on people.
Okay.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
We have Surah Zalzal in the Holy Quran, isn't it?
Yes.
Referring to, we can say, a kind of shaking and the quake that will happen. But according to some exegetes, this Zalzal is also Zalzal of inside of the spirit too, okay?
Yeah.
So when the earthquake of the inside happens, it will change you totally to a person of a spirituality. It is very much different from what we see as the earthquake today in the world. So, for example, is Allah going to punish the people by sending them down such disasters? Do we have any Quranic evidence? For example, in the Quran, they say that this tribe or that tribe or these people or that nation were punished because of doing sin by sending them, for example, such natural disasters?
Yeah, so here there are some verses that I would like to portray. For example, of knowledge, it is only a little that is communicated to you. Surah Al-Isra, verse 85.
Okay.
So regarding the causes of earthquakes and stuff, and the hikmah, the wisdom behind it, only a part of knowledge we have, and the remaining is according to Allah's wisdom. The second verse tells us, when the suffering reached them from us, means history in
yes.
the past.
Okay.
Why then did they not learn humility? The occurrence of earthquake, as I said before, it's not something new. It has been happening from previous
yes.
times. But people did not learn. For example, when construction started, people did not learn that now we should build better buildings.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't just look for money in building constructions.
Yes.
For this is one part of it. The second part of it is that earthquake happened into sinning places as well in the old times. Why did we not learn humility? Why did we not become better from that? You see, we ended up continuing our lives the way we want, following our desires, and ended up falling into calamity.
Okay.
This is related to sinning. Then it comes ahead where it has nothing to do with the sin.
Yes.
It is a test
mm-hmm.
for someone, for a person. So when they say that when an earthquake happens in a place where good and bad live in accordance together,
yes.
related correlation, for the bad, it is a punishment.
Okay.
For the good, it's a test.
It's a lesson, maybe.
It's a lesson.
Yeah.
For anything that you want to do, has to go through a process. For example, we talk about gold or iron.
Yes.
The only way it can reach its highest potential is after going through a burning flame.
Yes.
The iron or the gold. It's only after melting it you can get different designs of it and wear our women can wear it at home
yes.
as an ornament. You see?
Yes.
everything has to go through hard process. Mm-hmm. Even a person, a human being, if he has potential right now, it is because of the hard work and difficulties that he faced. Mm-hmm. If you take earthquake and natural calamities as a difficulty,
okay.
it's to open your potential.
That's right.
It's only when you realize it as a calamity, a test from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, will you be able to reach higher stages of your own potential.
And in the past, when the earthquake happens, because most of the buildings were so small, they were not that much long or tall, so there was no casualties, okay? I mean, the number of the casualties were very much lower than today, because nowadays, because of the so-called modern lifestyle, they build tall buildings, okay? So whenever there is even a small, we can say scale, or low scale, we can say earthquake, so all the downfall down, so the casualty and the numbers goes up. I do want to say that the modern lifestyle has also has affected, and they say that some people say that the biologists, we can say the scientists on earthquake say that earthquake has its own positive effects for the earth too. Okay, because these shakes that are happening, for example, under deep layers of the world of the earth, giving them life again. So this is not something absolutely negative in nature. I mean, earthquake itself, it has its own positive effect. Okay. So, but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not going to intentionally punish a tribe by earthquake. Is it so? Do we have any Quranic evidence, for example, showing this?
When you say Allah intentionally does something, there is nothing for Allah being unintentional.
Uh-huh.
We need to understand one thing, that when Allah says that he does something or he does not do something, it is the flow of cause and effect.
Yes,
he will not do anything that is against this cause and effect. So because of the benefit, as you said, yes. right now yourself, that these calamities that we see right now, especially I think you're referring to earthquake, when yes. there used to be times where there were yes. less earthquakes than yes. now. So the key word here is earthquake to happen.
Yes.
Now, whether in low capacity and high, yes, it has relation to technology, to factories being created,
yes.
to pollution of air. These things are there. But we need to understand that earthquake, even in those times when there were not this kind of things, it happens. So the cause of earthquake itself, it's not only because of the factories and this stuff,
right.
but at the same time, it's because of the progress for human being. While giving out, at the same time it gives out minerals and stuff, at the same time it is also a way of life for someone to understand that we need to be better.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brother Sohail, for a nice explanation how to take lessons from the earthquakes, and is it possible that the earthquake might be the punishment of the sins of the people or not. It was very kind of you. Thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husaynin wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husaynin wa hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي حسين وحسن
Palestinian flag, independence, and resistance.
Part 3.
Incredibly, shockingly, the targeting of Palestinian children escalated and peaked on the day of Eid al-Fitr, when the children of Gaza came out to play, to lighten up, relax, and have some fun to celebrate the last day of Eid, thinking that the Israeli army would not dare to violate such a holy occasion. Israel unmercifully sent missiles down, turning their brief period of joy to incomprehensible grief.
We live in Al-Ahrar Street at the beach camp, a major street in the camp area. We awoke on the day of Eid to enjoy it like everyone else normally does. The children were playing in the street, some were playing on the swings. All of a sudden, a missile landed on top of us. It was around 3 p.m. We were surprised by the explosion, but when we turned around, we saw the children had become shreds of flesh laying in the street. Some were injured and some others were dead.
I was playing on the swings when the missile landed. I got hit with shrapnel here. Some people were killed. My uncle Shaban, Jamal, and Muhammad were among those who died. I remember we were happy and playing on the day of Eid. Who could be so wicked as to bomb us on such a holy day? The children were out playing and rejoicing. And then the missile came, and in a second they were dead. Shaban had been blown apart. Others who died were Muhammad al-Halu, the Barid family's son, Muhammad Miqdad, and Muhammad Washah.
Muhammad Miqdad, Muhammad Washah. كان في كثير شهداء مرميين.
There were many martyrs, some scattered around on the ground, inside buildings, in trees, everywhere. The injured and the dead. Ambulances and cars swarmed on the location, and people were crying out in anguish for the loss of their children. 13 martyrs and 40 to 50 injuries. I sustained injuries to my leg here. And in my chest here.
My son was playing behind the car. He was almost next to me, but he died due to bleeding caused by a shrapnel penetrating his body. When the missile first landed, I was still conscious, receiving wounds to my stomach, legs, and arms. My leg disabled and my arm was broken and behind my back. I wore a white top which was covered in blood. I looked around just before I fainted to see the extent of the brutality and carnage. The scene was horrific, their actions so brutal.
Martyrs came from several refugee families at the beach camp on the first day of Eid after being targeted by an Israeli bombing campaign. On the third day of Eid, missiles of the Israeli occupation forces targeted some little kids who were playing with their grandfather with some simple new toys they had received for Eid on the roof of their home.
A truce was declared on television on the third day of Eid. We went up on the roof with all the little children. They wanted to play because it was a time of truce. They were not allowed to go out in the street because we worried about their safety.
بعد صلاة العصر حوالي بنص ساعة ساعة إلا ربع After 30 to 45 minutes of afternoon prayer, we heard more explosions. There was a first, second and third explosion. It took some minutes to work out what had happened. Our house was filled with heavy smoke and we realized that it was actually our house that had been bombed by an Israeli airstrike.
We rushed to the roof only to see the most horrifying scene. All that remained of the elderly man and the seven children that were playing were pieces of flesh and bone. At least three had their heads blown off. I looked over the martyred children. Two of my daughters were among the victims. One had survived. She had a hole in the back of her skull. Another girl was also alive, but couldn't talk. I called her and she looked up at me, so I rushed them to the hospital.
I searched around to collect my children. First I took Abd al-Halim, then I went back inside and got Abd al-Aziz. His head had been split open. I couldn't remove my third daughter. I couldn't find her head. Then I came downstairs and stood here at the doorstep. They took away the bodies of the martyrs in ambulances. I wanted to see whether they took the body of my daughter or not. I found my niece Malik, the daughter of Jalal. I kissed her forehead and I was about to leave with the ambulance. As I was stepping out of the ambulance, a rocket from an unmanned drone hit us. My leg was hit and had to be amputated. This finger and my arm were injured too. It was a cruel airstrike. In all, there were 10 martyrs from my family, including 7 children, my parents, my brother and his daughter, and my cousin who was carrying the bodies of martyrs at the time he was hit.
After the disproportionate aggression on the population of Gaza, there are still survivors today who suffer heightened psychological effects, reflected clearly in their behavior, which is especially telling during play activities such as painting that express the evil acts that Israel perpetrated against them.
Usually after the therapy process and even after recovery, there will still be some trauma symptoms among the affected children, with most of them on edge, in high alert mode, expecting more attacks on them. That's why you find that whenever a child is playing or drawing, the played-out theme tends to represent the incident, which is causing the alerted state from their memories, from their nightmares. When we spoke to children aged around 12 who survived the last three wars, who witnessed and suffered trauma from the 2008 Israeli-imposed war and this one in 2014, after recovering from each war and after being treated, they still believe that there would be another war and another. Three wars lived through by a child. The trauma is unimaginable, and the child is left in a state of constant alertness. We can't even tell them that they are safe, that there will be no more wars, or that everything is now fine.
Whenever they unleash a war on us, we will resist and defeat them.
It is beyond any reasonable doubt that targeting children of Palestine is part of the culture and a systematic issue of the Israeli occupation army, which seeks to brand the conscious mind of all Palestinian children with the ideology that they are all the undeserved, the subhuman, that there can be no Palestinian flag, no independence, no resistance.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. Today we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Naqvi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Dear listeners, Professor Naqvi is a faculty member at the Al Mustafa University, and we have had this pleasure to have him in the studio. We, in this program, discuss your problems, questions related to the Islamic upbringing and different topics which have a very great deal with the Islamic upbringing of children. And the answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad and his family, may peace be upon them. A very warm welcome, Professor Naqvi. This is our continuing session of obedience. And you said that when a child has aggressive behavior, it's a result of suppression of thoughts, suppression of feelings. So where do parents go wrong? Like, how do they suppress their kids and they don't even realize that they are suppressing their kids?
And the important thing is that we should always realize the fact that a child whom we have been entrusted with Allah Almighty is a precious thing. And I have to take care of his upbringing and should be concerned with it. It's not that I can't spend all my time with the child, but whenever I'm spending my child, especially the father, it should be a quality time. It should be time where should be a positive engagement between the family. And we need to be able to discuss things together when we are engaging with each other. And suppression comes when sometimes it comes because I'm engrossed in my own things.
Life, business, thoughts.
I need to take care of so many things. I just can't bear the child coming up with things and issues and problems all the time. And I tell him off or tell her off, or keep quiet or keep it to yourself. I can't do anything. That feeling puts, that expression of feelings puts the child off. And there becomes a barrier between him and you. And you can't. And then he starts looking up to other people.
All right.
And there and the problem begins. He then goes out and looks for that love from other, from
external
peers, from peers or other people who may put him off onto the wrong path. So we need to be very careful. We should always be careful of the fact that we should create a positive liaison with our children. We should never let them down. We should never let them feel that we don't care for them. Yes, if you are tensed, you are caught up in your own problems, ask him to give you some space, give you some time, and you will come back to him or her. If you are
so, assure your child that you're coming back.
Of course, you're concerned. You are ready to listen, but let him feel the fact that yes, I need some space for doing things, and then he should feel assured, as you said, that I will be coming back to him or her to take care of his or her problems and issues and whatever they want.
So what I can say over here, the thing that in the love of parents goes wrong here is that their love does not diminish at all. Their love towards their children is the same. But the fact what goes wrong over here is that your occupiedness occupies you so much that you're not able to pay quality attention, quality time. You're not able to spend enough time with your child, which actually results into some different kind of personality. He may have some different kind of psychological issues tomorrow. So being occupied is good, but not so much occupied that you miss the very important golden chance of spending the golden time, the quality time with your kids, which the childhood will never come back. So there would not be any other way to compensate that thing now. So we'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Nakavi, and we're discussing obedience, love, under the umbrella term of Islamic upbringing. Our love towards our children is very important, and expression of that love is also very important. How obedient we are towards our own parents reflects the very fact of being, the importance of being obedient, and that indirectly teaches our children to be obedient. Well, Professor Nakavi, where else do you think parents do right thing to teach love to their children, and where do they do wrong things to teach love to their children? In what context is the love shown, the love expressed? Like, I'll give you an example. There are mothers. Mothers are very, very emotional. I myself am a mother, and sometimes I myself am a victim of this, that you provide each and everything to your child, which is not even required, which is not even necessary. And mothers often think that this is love, to fulfill each and every small demand of a child. Do you think this kind of love is something that's the wrong way of expressing your love?
Of course, as you said very clearly, that doing everything for your child will be pampering him. He would or she would start expecting that everything that he or she wants has to be done, even if it's not within your power to do so. So it starts with small things, maybe. He or she would say, look, buy me that thing, I want this, I want that. So it starts from small things, and he or she doesn't realize that one day will come that my parents can't afford it, for example.
Right.
That is one issue. Or
because we have pampered our child that way.
So we need to make them realize the fact that they can't ask for everything. Or even if they ask for anything, that it does not mean that they would be given that thing and provided with that thing they want. And they should learn, we should be taught to make decisions regarding what they really require, what they really want, what they should really be looking for, something which would be beneficial for them. For example, we can make a balance between things. Oh, do you want this or that? You can show them and tell them that this is good for you, this is not good for you. Make the decision. You want this? If you want this, you can't have this. You want a toffee, or do you want a piece of maybe, you want fruit? A child would say, I want chocolate, I want chocolate. He likes to eat chocolate.
Okay.
You say, oh, chocolate is good, but fruits are
better.
Why
don't you taste fruits right now?
Fruits are better for you. Chocolates will damage your teeth.
Fulfilling their wish, give them reasons why.
Tell them why you're not giving them. Or you say, oh, okay, you want this, it's good for you, but I can't afford it at the moment. Give me some time. And then make them realize that, look, having material things is not important.
Not every day is a sunny day.
Material goods are not important. More important is spiritual gains.
All right.
Rewards for doing things which are good for your health, doing things which are good for your spiritual health.
Yeah. We'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned. Ya muqdiy al-khayrat,
ya muqdiy al-khayrat. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful.
Welcome Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab Fett, Professor Naqvi, and we are discussing love and obedience. Well, Professor Naqvi, we have been discussing about the mothers especially, or the parents, who think that giving or spending money on their children, or like fulfilling their each and every demand, is the best form of expression of love. But don't you think the same love would actually develop a very irresponsible personality? Because as this child grows up and he does not become responsible, because he thinks my mom is there to do, my father is there to do, they are there to do, because they have always shown there that we are there to, we are there.
Yes, so as a result of that, he or she expects everything to be done as he or she commands, and that should not be the case. You can put it off by saying that, okay, if you do this, if you do make it conditional and contingent upon doing something, oh, if you tidy up your bed, I will give you this. If you clean your bathroom, I will do this for you. So you can make it conditional. You can make it a reward for doing something which is necessary. So
even if you want to give something, teach them obedience at the same time.
Exactly.
So you're saying that expressing love is okay, but at the same time, if you're making them learn something in return, that's very important. Like being obedient, you're telling them, like, all right, if you want this particular thing, you have to carry out this thing so that you get this particular gift. But don't you think some parents who promise their children that I'll be giving you a particular gift, and then they fail to buy that or give that, or even if it's in there, you know, they can afford it, still they fail to do it because they just feel like, I just gave this promise to a child and don't give it enough importance. Don't you think the child with this ignorance will develop as a disobedient child?
The worst thing that could happen is that the child will lose trust and faith in you.
All right.
Will not expect you accept you as a responsible person or a truthful person. Of course, not keeping your promise, in some ulama, some scholars say it is not recommended. It is makruh. Some say it is haram.
All right.
Not keeping your promise is in any case very important. It's not a good thing. It's not commendable. It is either haram or it is makruh.
Because we have narrations which say if you give promise to someone, then do fulfill that promise.
Yes. So as far as the moral thing or morality goes, it's not a very good thing at all. So a child will start becoming like you in that case also, if you don't keep your promise. So number one, keep a promise something which you can afford, which you can manage. Number two, if you give a promise, keep it. It should be something which should have value for the child. I mean, it should be beneficial for him, not something which is harmful.
Which he thinks as is beneficial, but you don't see as a
yes.
parent it's beneficial.
I mean, you can say if you want to buy, what do you want to want me to buy you? Do you want something to, for example, I buy you some toy which you're going to break up in a few days, or I give you something, some book to read, or if I give you something
very resourceful, that's very
a game
useful.
Which will increase your mental abilities.
All right.
Not just toys which you can play around with and break them up. Of course, those have to be given also, but some toys are useful and beneficial in the sense that they teach you things.
Yeah.
And therefore, it depends upon your understanding. What is, number one, possible for you? Number two, what is good for the child?
All right.
And reward him. Learn him, make him learn how to become obedient.
All right. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us. Thank you so much to our listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen to our program again, go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. Go to the tab COI, Call of Islam, and you'll find an archive of all our programs. You can also find us on the social media platforms by just searching COI, Call of Islam. And you can also feel free to send us your queries, questions, or comments on our email ID, which is englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio. For those who seek the truth.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pit.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear listeners welcome to Youth Station I'm your host Mehdi once again we're gonna head towards the station
Wa alaikum assalam brother I'm here as well I'm Asma
Salam Asma how are you? How
thank
are you?
You thank you how are you?
Oh I'm alright I'm yeah, very you're... hyped up I think I've had a lot of sugar today yeah it's getting to my head
yeah right. That's
have you seen one of those memes? A photo where there's, I never knew what they call those stairs. You know those stairs that they have, those boxes they have after competitions and there's one, the first, second and third.
Yeah.
And everywhere, you see this everywhere in the competitions, the Olympics, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
Like the first position is like in the middle and the second and the third. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a meme that I was, the one in the third place.
Yeah.
This guy's like proper hyper and he's like screaming and everything. And one in the first place and second place is just looking at him like, what's wrong with this guy? He's in the third place.
Yeah.
Why? You know?
Not a big deal.
Yeah. Like I'm the one who's in the first place. He's like, you know, like.
It's okay.
No, he's
there's
in the first
no competition.
Place. Right? He's in the first
yeah.
place. But like the one in the third place is like even more hyper.
So happy.
And, yes. He's happier than the person in the first place. That's something like we do observe in people. Like certain people, they might have everything. They might achieve whatever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
They might achieve another person's dream.
Yeah.
But...
Grab it, of course, not achieve.
Achieve. No. Well, I mean, like, he succeeded in a certain thing.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But, like, that thing, yeah. which is...
He got something that is the wishing of the other.
Yeah, exactly. Someone else's dream.
The desire
you know?
Of other yeah. people, yeah.
But then there's a person who gets the most simplest of things or achieves the most simplest of things.
And they're more happier.
Yeah, this guy's like hysteric. You know, they're ecstatic. Yeah. They've lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
As if that, right. Now, what do you think happens? Why does this happen?
I would say some people are more grateful to the things they achieve. So they know the value of even the simplest thing that gets into their life. But the other people who are not very much happy with the greatest dreams that they achieve, maybe they've been inured to life. Maybe they are accustomed to it. Maybe, you know, how what happens to human beings when they get used to things or when they have too much of goodness in their life,
mm-hmm.
they no longer feel the desire to have anything and they have it. So everything in life turns out to be an illusion to them. I guess that's why they don't feel happy with it.
What do you mean by that illusion? What do you mean?
Like it's a mirage.
Okay.
I had it in mind and now I have it.
But
so
like the
it's
mirage
nothing.
Is something that's not there, right?
Yeah.
But that these people are achieving it. What do you mean? Like it's not illusion. They actually got it.
Like, you know, like when you see a mirage from far away, then you feel like it's something very, I don't know how to say it. It makes you so happy to think about it.
Okay, yeah.
But just imagine it's there and it's not a mirage and you get it. And when you get it, you feel like, okay, it wasn't just the way I thought it is. Mm-hmm. Or I have too much of it. Now I don't understand the feeling of even wishing that thing.
Okay, that's actually a good perspective. I'm thinking the person who is overwhelmed and who is happy with what he has or has achieved. In our example, the person in the third place, the guy in the third place, he's not comparing himself or competing in his own mind with the person who's in the first place or the second place. You know, one might say that, it's not very good. It's not very positive because, you know, you have to keep your hopes high. You need to keep the stakes high. You need to aim high, right? And you need to have that motivation to, you know, excel
to be the best.
Right, to be the best in everything,
in every
right?
single thing.
Exactly. Some people might say that. But, like, from the third place guy's perspective, he doesn't care about that.
No, that's very nice. Yeah,
you know, like he doesn't feel
the competition.
Yeah, exactly. The social constructs of society. Mm. He is not bound by that. What he's looking at is himself, what he was yesterday, how much he worked for what he's achieved, right?
Yeah,
and where it was that he'd started, right? So, if he's comparing himself to himself, right? If he's competing with himself, his yesterday, mm-hmm. then he's won.
Yeah.
And if he has...
And he has every right to be happy.
He has every... Yeah, because he's won everything, right? However, if this guy has... he sees that he has actually demoted himself from yesterday's performance, then he's going to work harder. He's going to realize that, listen, no, you know, I've not been growing. I've not been static.
I've had better days.
Yeah, I've had better days.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's only fair for me to work harder to improve where I am. So, yeah, I think like competing with others in terms of...
being the best or getting the best things.
Yeah, exactly. Is pointless, to be honest.
Of course,
literally pointless. If you talk about, in any perspective, like, for example... spirituality, anything, talk about anything.
Yeah.
People have an idea. They say that, like, you know, in spirituality, look at the people who are beyond you. Well, let's head for a break. You can have your cup of tea or sip of water.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to Youth Station. Right, so before I went to the break, we went to the break. Wow, I'm always talking about myself, aren't I?
Yeah.
I was pointing towards is like people say that in terms of spirituality, like look at people who are above you or who've gained more than you have, right? Fair enough, it's true. But like, it's true in the sense that you don't get ahead of yourself. You don't become proud.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. Okay, mm-hmm. that's true. But in terms of competing with them, I don't think that's actually very productive. That's actually detrimental for your growth. Yeah. Because you're looking at a person, you're like, oh, this guy's fasting like 365 days, you know?
Yeah.
Look at that. You head towards that. What happens? You drain yourself. Your battery's low. Boom, you're done.
Yeah.
You understand? And you've got no energy for no spirituality in your life. You're done with it. You're like, I'm tired of this now. You know, like, so competing with people.
And you know what? It's not about quantity.
It's not. Certainly not.
It's about quality.
The thing is, when I'm in my head comparing myself, competing with people who are like above me, then the only thing that I'm looking at, like, I'm only looking at it as quantitative, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's what I'm looking at now. Because I can never understand what that guy is going through. Neither that can that guy understand what I'm going through.
Of course, like, yes. Right? No, we're living our own lives.
Exactly. What I can see is the apparent.
Yeah.
Which, what is it? Quantity.
You know, even in a spirituality, I would say sometimes we say, okay, that person is a sinner, then maybe I'm closer to the Lord.
Yeah.
But that's wrong.
Yeah, maybe that thought itself is going to drive you away from Allah subhanahu
wa ta'ala. Exactly, because maybe that person, in just a moment, just a slight moment, then that person gets so close to Allah in a way that he is going to be even more valuable than you, who has been spending all your life fasting, praying, whatever.
Yeah, all of these, yeah. Well, you know, well, these are rituals, right? Rituals are not supposed to be the goal.
Yeah.
You know, they're meant to take you somewhere,
they're
right?
The ways.
Yeah, they are the path. Yeah, it's the path that's which you tread and you get somewhere.
Exactly.
So if I am looking at it as in terms of quantity, then as you mentioned, yeah, it's
all about quality. It's quality that matters in our life. And by the way, there's something. I also never feel the competition. Ever since I finished high school, I promised myself that I would never go for any sort of competition.
Why did you fail in high school?
No. No, I found all the efforts that I've been through was just a futile thing.
Because you failed.
No, because I understood that going to the best university or studying with the best students is not a goal in life.
Okay.
And then I understood that every moment that is given to you in life is going to be an opportunity.
Okay.
Which may not be given to you tomorrow or the day after tomorrow.
Because death is always there.
Mm. And then after that happened to me, right now I feel like everything is futile and meaningless.
What?
Because there is no competition, you know?
Everything is futile?
Yeah, everything.
So, like, if there's no competition, it's futile?
Everything that you do in, you know, as you go for a job or you go for things like this.
Okay, what's not futile?
What's not futile?
Yeah, because if everything's futile, right? Mm-hmm. What is not futile? Because I want to understand what you mean by everything.
Some things would turn into meaningless things that you have done in your life. If there is no competition, I would think so.
Said, I've realized that I'm not going to compete.
No, I just wanted to say competition is also good.
Okay.
We can't say that there is no competition and we shouldn't feel that competition, because also this competition is going to give you this urge in you to try more and more. When you're competing with yourself, maybe there comes a day that you feel like, okay, it's enough. It's enough for me. And you get satisfied with whoever you are right now.
Okay.
Then, in that moment, you turn into something not active too much. You would turn into a passive thing.
Okay.
But when there is a competition, you would feel like there's always this need in you to be improved or developed or evolved or whatever. You need to have a driving force.
It could be something better than just mere competition, right?
Yeah, it could be. But then you have to have that feeling of competition, I suppose.
Competing against whom?
Even if it's with your own self, I told you are going to get tired of it one day. So I guess sometimes it's good to look at other people's and maybe to compete with them in the sense of good things. Like, for example, I have a friend. She is too much evolved. And I look at her and then I learn from her.
That's inspiration, though, right?
Yeah.
That's like taking inspiration from certain people.
Isn't it true that sometimes competition is going to give ways to inspiration?
I don't know. Because if you look at competition, right, if you want to compete with someone, you want to beat them at that thing. That's what it means. Like competing with someone is getting ahead of someone.
Does it necessarily mean that you have to beat them?
Competing with someone means one is ahead of another one, like, right? Competition, what does it mean?
Okay, it's a competition, but wouldn't there be this competition in which there are 10 people who stay at that place for the first person?
You can compete in terms of spirituality. You can compete with, for example, me or your brother or your sister, your parents, anyone around you.
So in spirituality, you cannot beat anyone.
You can beat someone. Why? Because, you know, after all, someone's in be it spirituality or be it other worldly matters, someone's higher than another, right? That's true. Fair enough. So if you have, if you're higher than someone, you've beat them spiritually.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it sounds
We've
wrong.
We've gone
but like,
too far.
Right. But like, can you do that with Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam?
See, I'm telling
That's
you,
inspiration.
There's no beating.
No, there is like there is gain ahead of them, right?
Yeah.
One can in a spiritual station be ahead of another person, right? That if you're competing with them, fair enough, you can be ahead of them, right? But can you do the same with like Masumin alayhi salatu wasalam, like Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam? Can you be can like go ahead of him spiritually? Well, no. But he himself is an inspiration for you. So that's the driving force for you. Like, that's what I'm trying to say, is like inspiration is a stronger driving force than competition.
Yeah, I would agree right now.
And that's all I would say.
Yeah. See, just as we get to the end of this session, everything is solved.
Yeah, everything falls into place.
You have to say goodbye.
Do I have to?
Yeah.
Do I have to have to?
Have, must. You.
All right, okay. Then I'm being forced to say goodbye. I know you lot were... you know, eager to listen to more of what we have got to say, but unfortunately our co-host over here has decided that we have to finish. So finish it is. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. And in today's episode, we will be discussing two major issues, the Iran-India trade ties and the freedom of two brothers from Guantanamo after 20 years. So stay tuned.
In this special episode of The Subcontinent, we will discuss Iran's trade with India crosses $2 billion, registering 59.57% rise compared to the previous year. And we shall also take a look at two Pakistani brothers reach home after spending 20 years at Guantanamo without charges.
Iran's trade with India has crossed the $2 billion mark. The Islamic Republic's total exports to India hit more than $600 million during the year 2022, registering a 63.09% rise compared to the corresponding period of the previous year. According to estimates, the potential capacity of Iran's exports to India is equivalent to $21 billion. Experts believe that facilitating trade between the two countries will lead to the development of the economics of both of the countries.
According to the recent figures released by the Indian Ministry of Commerce and Industries, the net worth of Iran's exports to India stood at $653 million in 2022. The figure was $409 million in the year 2021, thus showing a definite increase since last year. India, being a major buyer of Iranian crude oil, petroleum products imported by India from Iran estimated a total worth of around $175 million. The other exported products included dye intermediates worth $152 million, fresh fruit $148 million, and residual chemicals including allied products worth $40 million. Iran and India bilateral trade during the fiscal year 2022 rose to $2.5 billion from $1.693 billion in 2021, showing a 48% rise. On the other hand, India's exports to Iran have also shown a considerable increase. During January-December 2022, India's exports to Iran rose 44% to stand at $1.847 billion, while the figure was $1.284 billion in 2021. Rice has been Iran's major import from India during the year 2022. India has shipped $1.098 billion worth of basmati rice to Iran. The other exports from the South Asian country include tea worth $79 million, sugar worth $66 million, other types of rice worth $61 million, and organic chemicals worth $44 million.
India has a pivotal role.